halfway through Yonah. Yonah is halfway through Che Osa. So we finish Yonah, we're halfway through Che Osa. But right now, let's go to, we're up to Paragimel Pasuk Aleph. A new topic. A new topic, continuing our discussion of what happened on the story. Beginning of Paragimel. Page 430. Vayihi Divar Hashem El Yonah Sheinis Leimar. Hashem spoke to Yonah Sheinis. The word Sheinis is an explosive word, which is the topic of enormous discussion. What does it mean over here, Sheinis? Sheinis is mashma, Hashem spoke to him. It's mashma two things. Number one, it's mashma that Hashem spoke to him a first time. And it's also mashma that Hashem did not speak to him a third time. Okay, that is the topic of discussion. Is the word Sheinis a punishment? That this is a Yonah, that's the end. I'm going to talk to you one more time, and I'm not going to speak to you a third time. Yonah, Chazal say, according to some, he was punished that Hashem shut down communication with Yonah after this mission was complete. It really would have been meant to be for Yonah to continue to maintain an open line of communication with Hashem even after the story of Yonah was over. But no, because Yonah was insubordinate, he disobeyed a direct order. So there were consequences, and those consequences played out later when Hashem only spoke. Hashem did not, when the story was over, it's only, that's it. There was nothing more. Sheinis v'loy shlishes. But Sheinis implies Hashem did speak to him once before. But that's obvious. Many times, in all of the Nevi'im, Hashem continuously speaks to the prophets, and we don't find Hashem counting his words. We don't find Hashem saying, okay, here's the first time, here's the second time, the third time. We're in the middle of one story. The story is, we're right smack in the middle. Why would Hashem have to say that Hashem is speaking to him, Sheinis? So there's a connotation that the quality and the approach of Hashem communicating with Yonah now is very different than Hashem's dealing with Yonah until this point in time. In other words, all of the Nevi'im, we have many Nevi'im, Yirmiyah, Yeshayah, Yechezkel, all the other Treyasar, Hashem talks to them, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem talks to them. There's a consistent pattern of behavior. Hashem deals, we all know that Hashem deals with each person on their unique level. Hashem customizes himself. Custom software. Hashem customizes himself to each person on their level, what is necessary. And there's consistency. The fact that it says here the word Sheinis indicates that there's a lack of consistency. Hashem over here has changed his derech, his approach in communicating with Yonah. It's going to be different, not the way it was before, because the circumstances have changed. And we'll have to see exactly what he's getting there. So two major themes that are being expressed in the word Sheinis. Pasuk, let's do another pasuk. Pasuk Beis, Kum, Leich, El Ninveh, Ir HaGadolah. Hashem basically is repeating himself. He's repeating exactly the same message he gave in Perek Aleph. I want you to go rise and go to the Ir Ninveh, Ir HaGadolah. Ukiro Lecha Es HaKriya. The Kriya means the text. Asher Anochi Deveri Lecha. I want you to deliver a very specific message. And notice, now we have to look, we'll see the first to compare that, how the Sefer began. In the Sefer, in Perek Aleph, if we go back to the beginning of the Perek, the beginning of the Sefer, when Hashem spoke to Yonah the first time, it says, Vayikum Lechel Ninveh, Ho'ir HaGidoylo Ukro Lecha Ukro Lecha. It does not say, the expression here is much more specific. Ukro Eleha. Okay, first of all, there's a major difference in the term. It's very worthy to just to look at the difference between page 404 and page 430. In page 404, it says Ukiro Oleha with an ayin. I want you to declare upon it, concerning it. Here in Pasig, in page 430, it says Ukiro Eileho. Eileho with an aleph. It's a very different word. I want you to speak directly to her, directly to it, to the city. Not about it. Don't talk generalities. Don't write a column editorial in the New York Times. I want you to attack. Take it by the horns. I want you to speak directly to the city. And whereas there in page 404, it just says, doesn't say what you should say. All it talks as general generalities, abstractions. Ki also rasam lufanai here, Hashem says to Yonah, I want you to speak, look them in the eye, and I want you to speak to them directly, and I want you to say, as hakriyah, there's a text, asher onochi doiver eilecha, exactly what I'm going to put, the words I'm going to put in your mouth. So obviously there's a whole different approach being presented here in page 430, verse where we had before, and that explains also our first question, why here it's called Shenis, because the approach now has changed. The game plan has changed. Okay, so let's see the Mitzvot David in these two Pesukim, Pasuk Aleph and Beis. The Mitzvot David, it's again on page 430, toward in the middle of the page. Aleph Shenis Bidvar Hashlichus El Ninve. So the Mitzvot is very, very simplistic. He says this is the second mention of this Shlichus, Pasuk Beis, Asher Nochi Doiver Elecha, that which I, Asher Nochi Doiver, I speak to you. I want you to relate to the people of Nineveh, word for word, the words that I relate to you now. V'huma shekara v'amar. Okay, what are the words? The words will appear at the end. Will appear in a few sukkim from now. Oid v'yabar oid arboim yoim v'ninve ne poches. V'lehutzruch l'farish ki me'elav yuvan. Itself understood what the words are. The text, the exact words that Yonah will say to the city will be presented in a few psukim from now. Now let's take a look at the Rashi. There is no Rashi. Okay, let's look at the Radak. Radak, Paskal, and Beis, v'hid v'rashim ol Yonah Shenis, kikvar pirash t'lamala, tam Shenis. He already explained before the time why it says Shenis. I don't even remember. Let's go back quickly and see what he says in Pasuk Aleph in Yonah. Okay, the Radak. This is we did this very long Radak. Okay, now it comes back to me. We did this Radak. The word Shenis basically is like I think pretty much what we explained. What we explained is that there was a a generalization back. Okay, let's just read a few of the words over here. It quotes the Medrash of the three people who were Tevea, the honor of Hashem. Well, I shouldn't say some. One was Tevea, the honor of Hashem, and not the Av and the Bain, not the father, and both jumped down halfway down the first paragraph, page 403. V'yidav Hashem Shenis. Shenis diber imoy v'loy shlishis. Okay, v'hikshu v'loy v'aksiv, it says, Asher diber b'yar avli yonah ben amit ha-navi, v'teresh l'eskin ninve v'loy diber imoy el pam shenis v'loy shlishis. Mehem amru lo diber imoy ela b'dvar ninve, v'loy b'dvar acher el pam shenis v'loy shlishis. Masham asher diber b'yar avli yonah ben amit ha-yor etzalem ha-kmoshin is ha-pech lachem b'n ninve, me'ro le toiva, So his main point is what we started in the beginning, and that is the word Shenis is an indication that Yonah was punished. Because of his defiance, Hashem did not continue to use Yonah as a messenger for his word when the story of Nineveh was complete. Oh, you'll ask a question, but it doesn't say from Malachim that Hashem spoke, just like Hashem spoke to Nineveh concerning another matter. It does not mean there that Yonah was actually involved. That pasuk, according to Radak, means that just like there was a story regarding Yonah where a city did teshuvah And what was meant to be evil turned into good. So too in this story, things are going to turn around. Things turned upside down. That's all it means. It does not mean there in Sef Malach when it says that just like Hashem spoke to Yonah, it does not mean that Hashem had another communication with Yonah. We're just coming to it's a reference point. Just like we find in, there was a period of time when through Yonah things changed, so too now things are going to change. But in actuality, according to the Radak's interpretation, Hashem, this was the last time Hashem communicated with Yonah, Shenis, V'loy Shlishis, because Hashem was coming to punish Yonah for not obeying his commands. So there are consequences. Just because Kodesh Baruch Hu was patient and spared Yonah and had the fish swallow him up and he survived the ordeal, there are still consequences in this entire story where Hashem did not speak to him for a third time. Pasuk Beis in the Radak, Kum Ashanochi Doiver Shdibarti Elech Kvar Vegamato Ani Doiver Elecha Shetikra Elecha Shetia Nepeches Al Ra'asam. Okay, it's simply just saying, oh, here I want you to go give them basically the same message I told you to give them before, that if they do not do tshuva, they don't shape up, they're going to ship out. And when you talk about Yonah, the word ship is a very good word. You don't shape up, you're going to ship out. Okay. At least someone laughed. Okay, well, that was Kedai to come today for that, right? Try that at midnight, you'll see. Okay, let's see over here. What's in the Mal? Mal, page 4, 31 on the bottom. Here, the Rashi, Mal Yevsky, you see, the Barbanel over here is coming over here, giving us a drash. Okay, we have to give covered, covered is deserved. Kosav al ma she'omru chazal she'enis diber imo v'loy shlishes. He's picking up on the same theme, punishment. She'zem muchrach mimasha kosav v'seder oilam. In seder oilam, the classic medrash that describes the history of the world. One of the most important midrashim we have telling us history, Jewish history. We know almost all, much of Jewish history comes from seder oilam. And what does it say there? Sheyona Moshach es Yehu b'shnas Gimul alafim Samach beis Libriyas Olam. V'choya ad Zecharya Shemolach Gimul alafim Kuf Samach Dalet Harei Chana. So therefore, how long is the difference between so that is 102 years? Now, when Yonah was Moshach Yehu b'Nimshi Yehu, he wasn't a youngster. He wasn't 3 years old. Okay, it's not likely he was a baby when he anointed the king Yehu. He had to be at least, 20 years old. So that makes him at least 122 years old. Had to, and doesn't say that he died either. Doesn't say that he died the moment after he was Moshech Zechariah. Chagai Zechariah Malachi, which is the very, very end. So it has to be that he lived, and if he didn't die the moment after he was Moshech Zechariah, that means that he lived for, I mean, it's at least 102 years off the bat. We assume he had to be at least 20 years old when he was Moshech Yehu, and maybe he lived another 20 years. So we're dealing over here, he lived, who knows, maybe even close to 150 years. Is that a fair thing to say? Fine. But that's what it says over here. Hari choyim yom sheischil hisnabes meo ushtayim shon. It's at least 102 years. V'loy motzondo lo nevuah acheres b'meshach hazman hazekim shteh ha-nevuos shenibay el ninve. So, Seder Olam reveals an incredible piece of information. It was Yonah, who was the Navi, that appointed Yehu ben Nimshi, one of the first kings of the after Yeravam ben Nevat was deposed, let's go back to page 915 in the back. We'll go to page 915 on the back of the sefer. You see over the Malchei Yisrael. Okay, so the Malchei Yisrael, there was a line of kings with Yeravam ben Nevat. That line of kings came to an end, that family came to an end with Yehoram. Okay, if I'm not mistaken, I have to brush up on my Nach, but these were all part of the same family. And then Hashem was displeased with Yeravam ben Nevat, what he did, and Hashem cursed him, that your bones, that your descendants will be punished severely for what you've done, the machlekes you've created in Klal Yisrael, especially the Avodah Zarah. And then Hashem sent the Navi to anoint Yehu ben Nimshi. Now, in the
Pesuk, but in this chart, that's a problem.
Why?
Look where Yonah is. He's not even around at the same
time. Okay, right. So in this chart, on the bottom of number 11, it says, Ayni Vamas Adichaske. So, Enechanami, you're right. So, that's not Enechanami. We had this many times. They're conflicting. Mamari Chazal asked when Yonah lived. The story of Nineveh seemingly took place during the time of the second Yeravam. Okay, it was from a different family entirely. The second Yeravam, you see over here on the side of the Gemara talks about this, and we know that he anointed Zechariah. Zechariahu was a king. He was the father of Shalom. That was the last Tekufa of the Aseres HaShvatim. So Yonah for sure lived during the time of Zechariah because he anointed him. But according to Seder Olam, where it says that a Navi came and recruited Yehu to be the new line of Malchus in the Malchei Yisrael, after the family of Yeravam ben Nevat was put to an end, all of these people over here are descendants of Yeravam ben Nevat. Okay, these are all part of his regime,
dynasty.
And that dynasty came to an end because of the Avodah Zarah he introduced into Klal Yisrael. So then Yehu was appointed. Yehu was given legitimacy by the Navi. I don't think it says who the Navi is. It's a mystery who the Navi is. And Seder Olam tells us a secret that the Navi that says there in Sefer Melachim, that was the one who anointed Yehu and recruited him. There's a whole story there. I don't remember all the details. There, that was, who was that? That was Yonah ben Amittai. We have a lot of, it's amazing, Yonah ben Amittai was a very, very amazing person. He was anointed the first, he anointed Yehu, he anointed Zechariahu. We know that Chazal said that he was the child of the one that he experienced the Chiyas HaMesim through Eliyahu HaNavi, okay, the Rebbe of Elisha. Right. He's not the Ben Hashanamis, he was the predecessor to the Ben Hashanamis. A similar story where Eliyahu HaNavi gave life, resurrected a child, and that child that he resurrected was Yonah. So we have a lot of very interesting things about Yonah. You collect all the information about Yonah. Yonah was a very colorful person. He's mentioned in Sefer Melachim that he gave over another prophecy, and that we have a whole debate that he actually, as we learned, we just read from the words of the Radak, that he actually gave a prophecy which was just a reference point. And here, we're making these calculations according to the Malbim, Seder Olam, he lived at least 202 years between Yehu ben Nimshi and Zechariahu, and we don't find anywhere in Tanakh explicitly any other explicit message presented by Yonah in 202 years. That's all he got to say. That's it. Okay, then how many cycles of Daf Yomi can you go through in 200? What? Correct.
It's frequently authoritative because it goes back so far. It's an ancient reference. Rashi refers to it frequently.
Very frequently, right. Seder Olam is our basic bread and butter, meat and potatoes source of Jewish history. Yeah, of course. That's common. The Midrashei Chazal very often contradict one another. Sometimes they can be reconciled, and more often than not, they cannot. And if they cannot, so what does it mean? So it means whatever it means. Okay.
Well, I'm saying, when you combine different sources with different timelines, you're going to get.
Absolutely, it's extremely common. Look, even Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara, but even the Gemara, forget about the Midrashim, the Talmud. Moshe Rabbeinu, when was he? When was he born? 7 months. Or was he born 9 months?
Right.
I'm sorry, 6 months. Was he a preemie, or was he a full-term baby? And then there's a nafkamina Okay, I don't remember all the details. There are major consequences. Like, even the date of Matan Torah. The Matan Torah take place on the 50th day, Vav Sivan, Zayin Sivan. Something so fundamental to Yadus. Hashem gave us the Torah. We were all there. So we don't know the calendar date. When it took place, was it the 6th day of Sivan? Was it the 7th day of Sivan? So the Gemara presents basic, elementary Yisoidos are subject to dispute. Alachas.
What? The problem of Zion was they had a Kabbalah that Moshe wrote a Sifrei Torah on the last day of his life, which turned out to be Shabbos. So the question is,
how can you write on Shabbos? How can you write on Shabbos?
That's one of the problems.
When did Moshe Rabbeinu die?
Gets into.
Right. So there are a lot of these different issues.
What are you telling me?
All different ways to try to reconcile these differences. Yeah. Some don't even try. It just whatever. Just okay. But over here we have a little bit. He tells us it's a fascinating idea, and he points out over here is that we do not find him giving over in the prophecy. I'm a little bit less than halfway down on the right side on page 431 in the Malvim on the bottom. Mizayodanu shenechtila mimenu hanavua. It has to then be the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He shut him off. He locked him out. He denied him communication. His license was revoked.
If he makes a comeback,
then he gets a new license. Okay, but his license was suspended, and his service provider, his ISP, denied him service. The Roy Hoyle Aosois Kane, why was he deserving to be banned? Because Achashu ni'ates es hanavu. Now he's a very powerful word. He ni'ates. Ni'ates means he rejected. But it doesn't just mean to reject. The word ni'ates has a real oomph to it. It means he detested with intensity. He rejected Hashem's direct order. If you're a soldier in the army and your commanding officer gives you an order and you disobey, no, that's treason. That borders on treason. It's treason, but it borders on treason. This is a serious business. So, Shehu ni'eitz es hanavua v'loi rotzel l'malas d'var Hashem. He did not want to... What? Oh, very good. Ni'atznu. So, ni'atznu means... What's the good translation of ni'atznu? Look, the art scroll translation for the word ni'atznu. It means ni'atz is to reject. To reject with an intensity, with an attitude. Okay, to reject with, you know, it doesn't use reject, no, with an attitude you reject it. It has a flavor to it. He writes, it's a wonder, it's a pella. It's a wonder that he contradicts himself later on. What do we mean? He explains. There was 6 years before the Churban of Shomron. He gave over prophecy in addition 10 years. He's still quoting the Seder Olam itself contradicts itself. Because first it says that this was the only prophecy that Yonah related. And this prophecy took place when? 6 years before the end of the Aseres HaShvatim. And that was the whole thing that we've been discussing all along. The reason why Yonah did not want to give over Nevuah to Nineveh, because who was the one who exiled the Aseres HaShvatim? The Malchus of Ashur. And this event was, Nineveh is the capital of Ashur, and this event was taking place right smack in the middle of this era when the Aseres HaShvatim were being exiled. The Aseres HaShvatim did not go into exile overnight. It was a process. It was, in fact, a very long process. And there were three major waves of exile. First, the people of the Eder HaYarden, and then the people along the Mediterranean, and then the center where the capital was located of Shomron. So this event took place 6 years before the Aseres HaShvatim came to an end. Yet, we also know from Sefer Melachim, this is what everyone was quoting, the parts that we quoted in Sefer Melachim, that during the time of Menachem, then, King Menachem, during that king, the imkein niba olam. Sorry, the polishu soisas asma mashkos of achrezem besamuch shenvuas yona al ninve. The korban took place during the last king. The last king of the Aseres Hashatim was who? They were in jeopardy. It is Hoshea ben Ela. V'im Kain. Nibe oid eser shanim b'mei Menachem. He gave a prophecy. Eser shanim, 10 years. Menachem ben Gadi. Shtei shanim b'mei Pekachya b'noi. So let's see. 10 years b'mei Menachem ben Gadi, shtei shanim b'mei Pekachya b'noi, eshim shanim 20 years b'mei Pekach, v'sholosh shel Hoshea, harei nimshach zman nevuos kuf lamed zayin shana. He's saying we got here a problem, because if we go back to the chart on page 915, okay, if we look at this chart on page 915, Yehu. And we look at the end of Zechariah. Okay, so here are the kings. Yonah was Moshech, he anointed, he put into power the king Zechariah. The problem is when did the Aseres Hashvatim go into exile? In the time of Hoshea. So from the time of Zechariah to the time of Hoshea, you look on the chart, page 915, we have Zechariah, we have Shalom, we have Menachem, Pekachya, Pekach, and Hoshea. If you look on the side, on page 4, page 914, it shows you how long each one of these kings ruled. So reigned. Zechariah only reigned for 6 months. Two stars means 6 months. It says that in the Bible, right? Two stars means months. One star means days. So 6 months. Shalom ben Yovesh is 1 month. Menachem ben Gadi is 10 years. Pekachya ben Menachem is 2 years. Pekach ben Remaliah is 20 years. And then Hoshea ben Ela, the last king of the Aseres Hashvatim, he reigned for 19 years. A grand total of, what is the, well, he does the math for us. It comes out, Hare Nimshach Zman Nevuas Kuf Lamed Zayin Shana. The Gam Hale Nevuas Ninve Hoysa Besof Yamav was the end of his days. The Eich Navi Ro'oya Mimashal Diber Imo Hashem Koidim Lamaisezo. Leimar Shahoya Osid Lika Hanavua Mimenu. That Hashem will take the Nevuah from him. The Oslo Serva Dain Beshlichos Od. Beshlichos. He did not yet refuse to do the mission. Let's go further. Let's clarify a little bit more. We'll come back. We'll try to do this to clarify. Od, Yispale. There's another wonder. Shebesefer Nachum, Kosav. She Arboim Shana Me Oisoy Zman She Nibe Yono Hayochurban Shoyman. There's a contradiction, like a Michal pointed out, that Seder Oilam seems to indicate that the Churban took place. Shoymroin was Chorav. 6 years after the story of Nineveh. But in Sefer Nachum, I don't know what the source is, he writes here, it took place 40 years later. So now we have in 80 years, okay, I apologize to you. I didn't prepare this too well, obviously. But the basic gist of what he's saying over here, we're not going to go into too much detail over here because I don't know, I'm take forever. It's my fault. I apologize. But basically here, he's saying here that the numbers do not add up. We have conflicting mamore chazal. When exactly did the story of Nineveh take place? When did the prophecy take place? And when indeed was Ashur decimated? When was it destroyed? Did it take place many years later, shortly later? When did the Nevuah of Yonah, the story of Yonah, take place relative to the Aseres Hashvatim? Did it take place 6 years before the Churban? Did it take place 40 years before the Churban? We do know that Yonah was the one who was Moshech. He put into power Yehu. He put into power Zechariah. Indeed, between Yehu and Zechariah, indeed, there was 102 years. But that's not the end of the story. There's another, there are more years of Shalom, Menachem, Pekachia, Pekach, and Hoshea until the story of Yonah took place. So he's not giving us answers, so let's not try to reconstruct all of the numbers. But we'll just leave it with this, is that we have conflicting Maimorei Chazal as to when exactly did Yonah live, when exactly did Yonah give over the prophecy to Nineveh, when exactly was Shoimroin destroyed, and when exactly was Nineveh, which was the capital of Asher, they also ultimately were destroyed in the time, well, we know they were destroyed in the time of Jehoiakim. If you look on the chart, page 915, that's the Malchi Yehuda. That was much later on. Jehoiakim, much, much later on, is when the city of Nineveh was destroyed, which seemingly was 80 years later. But according to our calculation, it does not work out, does it? 3-3-2-1-0. It should be 3-3-0-0. But over here, it's more like 3-3-2-0. So also the numbers do not seem to work out here on this chart either, with what it says that it was destroyed 80 years later, after Hoshea. So I don't know the answer. I'm not sure. We'll leave it with that. And maybe at some point in time when we'll have another piece of information, we'll come back to this and we'll try to reconstruct all of the dates. In the meantime, let's take a look at the Maimorei Chazal. Okay, the Maimorei Chazal over here are very, very interesting. Pasuk Aleph and Beis, Vayihid Rashim al Yonah Sheinis Lemar. Omar on page 330. Well, we already quoted what the Malbim already touched upon, what the Malbim touched upon, and what the Radak touched upon. Hashem only spoke to Yonah twice. He did not speak to him a third time. Question is, but it says in Sefer Melachim, who Heshev is Gevul Yisrael, Milvoy Hamas, the king. This particular king, he restored the boundary of Yisrael, Milvoy Hamas, Ad Yom HaRava, Kidvar Hashem, Asher Diber Biat Avdo Yonah ben Amitai Hanavi. So Yonah went and predicted that the Gevul of Yisrael would be restored. There would be a victory. So the Pasuk in Malachim seems to indicate that Yonah was a well-known prophet, and he made a prediction that they would succeed in a battle that has nothing to do with the story of Nineveh, of our Sefer. So it turns out that it's not Sheinis. There was indeed a Shlishis, another prophecy. And over here it appears that when Chazal asked this question, they're working with the premise that this event took place later. Okay, it seems like they asked this question, that this event that we're quoting from Sefer Melachim, that Yonah, when he made a prediction that there would be a battle and the Jews would be victorious, took place after the story of Yonah and Nineveh, which means there would indeed be a Shlishis. How then can Chazal say Sheinis v'lo Shlishis? Omar Ravina says it's not a question. You're right, Hashem of course spoke to Yonah multiple times. It means regarding Nineveh. Nineveh was only a double nevuah. There was only Hashem needed to communicate with Yonah twice now. Well, Iske Nineveh Kamar period. Rav Nachma Yitzchak Omar, Ein Kavonas Apostle Shayona Nibe Elo, Hoch doesn't mean that he gave a prophecy, Elo Hoch Kamar Kidvar Hashem. Asher Dibi Biaravdo Yonah ben Amitai Hanavi Kishem Shenepach Kizeres Hashem LeNinveh Meirol LeToiva Kach Bimei Yeravam Ben Yoash Yeravam the second, this Yeravam later on Nepach Lam Lishol Meirol LeToiva, like exactly what it said in the Malbum. It does not mean that it was, he actually quoted this Chazal, does not mean that Hashem actually spoke to Yonah. We're just using Yonah as a reference point, just like Yonah predicted that things would get better in reference to an entirely different story. Nineveh would things would get better for them. They would not be destroyed. So too, here in the time of Yeravam ben Yoash, things would get better. Things indeed got better. They were suffering, and Hashem brought about a salvation, and people related, oh, this salvation has a parallel in the story of Yonah. Obviously, there's a lot more to it. There's a lot of depth over here. The relationship between the story of Nineveh and Yonah and the story of Yeravim and Yoash and exactly what happened in this battle. But it does not mean literally that Yonah gave over a message. Yonah was shut down. Yonah lost his license. It's a reference point. It's just an equation. Yeah. Maybe, ein hachinami, that's part of the question. If you're not going to learn to be taken literally, it's just referring to as an analogy. It was a dogma, a case in point, a case study to use as a reference point. You're right. Nineveh, Chazal tell us, only temporarily survived. It was a delay tactic. They did teshuvah, but ultimately they went back to their old ways, their bad ways, and they were destroyed. So maybe you want to say that's why that this event where the success, the victory of the Jewish people was achieved was also only short-lived until ultimately it was the territory was taken back to the enemy in Achnami. Okay, I don't know the story there in depth, so that's something we have to study and review.
That's why I like the Ebenezer, what he says over here. If you look, he says that the people from the ship, they preceded Yonah to Nineveh to give him like an advance party to say this guy is on his way.
That's an Rabbeinu Bachi, yes,
sir. I want to tell you the whole story so you know who this person is.
That's an amazing idea. You're giving more insight to Rabbeinu Bachya. Yes, what Rabbeinu Bachya says is that the people over here, when the ship survived, they went to Nineveh.
Yeah, and they told them that Yonah is a real...
and they gave them warning of what's going to happen. Okay, Nechanam, they gave Mahakdama what happened. That's very also, if that's taka true, then it totally changes the whole drama, the whole story. Because if Yonah would have just come to Nineveh and started talking, who says they will? Who are you?
Right, yeah.
Who are you? But now when you have the UN arrives, what?
That's also what he was thinking.
You mean this was the plan. The whole thing was one big plan to go shake up these people. He gets on the ship. Who's on the ship? The UN. Right. You go on the ship, you have over here. Who's on the ship? You have over here a big meeting of the United Nations and all of the ambassadors, all the heads of state come and they all get on a plane to go back to the Middle East. Oh, that plane that's going back to the... I'm getting on that plane. And he gets on that plane, and he calls the plane to go down, and they witness miracles. And then they all get back on the plane, and they go back to their country, and they tell, you know what we saw? Oh, you've now set the stage. So, in Achanami, it's a beautiful... So you're saying over here something very, very profound. You're saying over here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Soif Maisa B'machshava Techila. Hashem knew Yonah would be insubordinate. And he, B'davka, chose Yonah, the person who was going to be insubordinate, in order to bring about this whole story on the ship. So the people on the ship should set the stage and loosen up the minds of the people of Nineveh to be receptive to the words of Musar of Yonah.
I like to think that the reason Yonah had this koach to be insubordinate in the first place, because since he knew that his beginning was a miracle, his life shouldn't have been here, that God put him here for a purpose, so he feels the idea that I could push the envelope a little bit here, because I'm here for a reason. God is not going to kill me. Let's see. I'm here for a reason, obviously.
There's a book.
Psychologically, it plays on your mind. Why am I here? Yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying, psychologically, why am I here?
There was a person's name was Label Zisman. You know who Label Zisman was? He said, that my father's shul, he was Lubavitcher. And so he was Nifter a couple of years ago. He was a Holocaust survivor. He has the most amazing story, how he survived. And his wife, he wrote a biography, his wife, they republished it. And basically, a cat has 9 lives. Well, he has 90 lives. He went to the Holocaust. Basically, every situation where you can do something to get yourself killed, he did. He did, and like basically, he didn't even care. It's like, want to kill me? Kill me. And one time after another, lemala miderech hateva, he wasn't killed. He put himself just bizarre as can possibly be, and that's the whole book describing how. And he attributes his miraculous survival, even though he was extremely sloppy and callous in his whole approach to life in the Holocaust, because of the bracha of the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. When he was a young boy, his father took him to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Well, who's the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe? He's not here. Not the Riatz, the one who was before the Riatz. The fifth. Shalom Dov Ber. He was the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. The sixth was the Riatz. The seventh was the Mamosh. And the eighth is Hashemini. No, okay. Lubavitcher was called Hashvi'i. Hashvi'i. They had a tradition in Chabad, that there are going to be seven Rebbes. Hashvi'i, there's seven Rebbes. Lubavitcher, the Mamash, Menachem El Shnerson, he was the seventh. You got to learn about Lubavitcher. It's so fascinating. The history of Lubavitcher. It's not real. What? He attributes, when he was a little boy, his father took him to the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. Yeah.
From a chronological point.
Can be.
He was born before 1920.
Yeah.
Zisman was born
before. Label Zisman?
He lived to be 100 years old.
How old would he be now?
Be 100, over 100 years old.
I got to go back to the book.
Right.
I have to go back to the book. So maybe it wasn't Lubav. Maybe it was a different Rebbe. Maybe it was a different. Maybe it was a, maybe it was a Belzer Rebbe. It wasn't Satmar. Maybe it was the Belzer Rebbe. Okay, I got to go back. Believe me, I got to go back. I have the book. I know where the book is. I have the book. But he writes the idea. Basically, he just and hateva. So he says something very similar. And you know, and then he writes. You know, when he used to go around the end of his life. He used to go around to all the schools. They would invite him. Every elementary school would invite him to come and talk to the children about the Holocaust. It's very important to talk from a survivor. And they would line up for brachas. I remember it was a balabas, my father's shul. I never even knew his story. I didn't know anything until after he died. I just knew him. He's a nice guy, you know. He was a shtigl Lubavitch. He wasn't a real Lubavitch. He was a Lubavitch. And, you know, in later years, he moved away. He wasn't there so much. But in the book, they write, they always ask him, why did you behave like this? Why did you do things that were so irresponsible? We normally hear stories about survival. People do everything they possibly can to survive, to live another day. I'm hearing in the Holocaust also, these stories. And you were just the opposite. So he says, you don't understand. He says, and this really shook me to my core. You don't understand. The Nazis, what they managed to do is to demoralize the Jewish people to such a degree that life meant nothing. So you're living in America, you tell this child, you're living in America, life is good. And even if life is miserable, we hear stories of people take their lives. We hear stories, unfortunately. But generally, people have what they need. Okay, they're a little depressed here and there, but they have what they need, and life is worth living. You don't understand what it was like. Really, it is impossible for a person living today to understand, to put themselves in the frame of mind of what life was like for me and my friends and my chevra. I guess also with a certain age. Probably it also has it also relates to an age group of that time, of what it was like. Life meant nothing. You want to kill me? Kill me. I don't care. Right. What am I living for? This is what the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, this is one of the biggest tragedies of the Holocaust. Of course, the tragedy, they killed 6 million people. But even the survivors, even the people that did not die, they put in them this attitude that your life is worth nothing.
Right.
And even those who survived, how many of them were able to rebound and live productive lives? And even those who didn't live productive lives, how many were willing to be religious Jews? Very, very few. We glorify. We make it sound like, you know, every survivor is a Kaddish Vitar. They all are. You can't blame anyone. I mean, you can't blame not even a Chas Shalom. But the survivors who we built productive lives are really the Yechidim. Our Yechidim, the people were so traumatized, they were so demoralized. Yonah really is just like that. What?
Do you know the name of the book you're speaking about?
I'm going to bring it in Bli Neder. Okay, I'll bring it in. It's a very, very good book. It's a very easy read. It's very quick. It goes very quick. It's a very good book. Bli Neder, I'll bring it in. And Yonah. When I read that book, I didn't even really read it so well, but I read that book, and I learned that Yonah, this striking, it wakes you up in this matter. Yonah is very irresponsible, very callous. He just, his whole life is not worthless. Hashem tells you to do something, you get on a ship going somewhere else. There's a storm, he goes to sleep. He goes to sleep at the bottom of the ship. Hashem throws him overboard, a fish eats him up. Big deal, he doesn't daven, like nothing. Finally, when he's suffering because there are other fish inside, with other small fish, then all of a sudden he has a change of heart. There's an incredible degree of like, I don't care. I just don't care. And that is only a product of an environment, a situation, of something greater than you. And the only way we can really go into the mind frame of Yonah is to understand the times that he lived. Just to say, okay, he was a prophet of Tchias HaMesim. Elio HaNavi came and he was dead, and the mother came crying to Elio HaNavi, I was so good to you, how can you let my baby die? Okay, Nechaya HaMesim. Okay, I'm a prophet. And so, but that's just one day. You're born. Then where did you go to school? What did he have to? What kind of childhood did he have? What kind of society was he living in? What was going on? We don't know. These are all very, very big mysteries.
Changes your mindset.
Yes. Your environment, just like Label Zisman explained, that when he grew up, what the Nazis managed to do was to demoralize people where life wasn't worth living. We have to assume that Yonah lived against a backdrop of something that had a major effect on him, that my life is worthless. It's just not. I'm not interested. Leave me alone. I'm not interested in being part of this program. You want to go take me and bring me here and there? I'm not interested. This totally changes. No, it's okay. It was my fault. This is a very important point to understand the person Yonah, where he is coming from, to gain insight into his frame of mind, why he behaved in such a irresponsible way, ignoring and defying the word of Hashem. It's very important. We don't really...
See, Hashem loves him. Hashem wants
him. Hashem still gave him many more chances, obviously, because there was much more to the story than we know. And here, this Malbim, and we're learning this Maamar Chazal, it's telling us, well, do you know when he lived? Do you know who you're going to live? So go to the chart.
What is his personal life? The wife and family.
There are two things. There's the personal life, and look at his life against the backdrop of his communal, of what was taking place in Klal Yisrael. So you go to the chart on page 19, we get a reference point. He lived during the time of Yehu through the time of Hosea.
Right.
These were very turbulent times. These were very. We have a whole Sefer Melachim, Mamish. The whole Sefer Melachim is all about
Israel getting picked off little by little,
And besides the infighting, there were basically civil wars going on his entire life between the Malchus of Yisrael and the Malchus of Yehuda, and amongst the Malchus of Yisrael, they were doing the most horrible, the worst sins that ever took place were taking place during this time over here, in the Malchus of Yisrael. And then later on with Menashe, it was also bad, but at least the Malchus of Yisrael, from all sides, the world is coming to an end. There's a civil war between Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda. Amongst the Malchus of Yisrael, there are assassinations. There is Avodah Zarah. There is outright rebellion. There are a lot of problems. And against that backdrop, we have a person, Yonah. He dies. And Elio HaNavi says, are you going to live Tchias HaMesim? And here he is, living in this world. And Hashem says, I got a mission for you. And Yonah says, I'm not interested. Leave me alone. If we were able to see the backdrop, we would have a whole different perspective of Yonah. And then we would say, it's not fair. We look at this Chazal, Hashem spoke to Yonah, Sheinis, v'loy shlishis, Yonah, I'm punishing you. So maybe when you look at the backdrop, you would say, why should Hashem punish? Who could blame him? Right? Like you say about the people in the Holocaust. You can't blame anyone. You can't blame anyone. There's no one you can say boo. Anyone that acted anything, did anything noble, this is mamash l'mam erachateva. So just because a person was not able to do these incredible things, Hashem should punish him. Sheinis v'loy shlishis. You can turn the whole question upside down on its head when you have an appreciation of where Yonah is coming from. Okay, but at least we have this very fascinating Maamar Chazal. Let's finish up over here with Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya, Pasuk Aleph and Beis. Pasuk Aleph and Beis. Page 431. When Hashem spit out Yonah to the dry land, immediately he began to give over prophecy. Hashem spoke to him. Like we just concluded, it's the second time Hashem delivered a message regarding Nineveh. Now, this is the idea that we really started with today. Besides the concept of Sheinis v'lo shlishis, there's also teaching you that the nature of the second Nevuah regarding Nineveh is very different than the nature of the first time he spoke to Yonah regarding them. We gave examples, we compared the Psukim. Kibri Shayna Hayuruim Ruim Le Onesh Miyod. Uchashenis Acher Hadavar Ad Hanavua Hashenis Niftichu Lohem Share Teshuva. Now this is something very, very bizarre. He's revealing over here new information that we've never come across.
On the people of Nineveh?
Yeah. Nineveh, when Hashem sent Yonah to Nineveh for the very first time, it was an emergency. If they didn't, the emergency was they're going to be punished immediately. And we do not know, he's not revealing to us what happened. Yonah said, I'm not going. When Yonah said he's not going, something happened that we do not know. Why the Gezerah upon Nineveh was suspended. Basis, there was a stay. There's not going to be an imminent punishment.
Now, did it go?
Maybe that's why. Because since the last warning, the man who has to give them the last warning is insubordinate. So Hashem said, Shimon, you know what? Let's cancel, let's put on hold the plan, postpone the plan to destroy Nineveh. Now, once it was postponed, it's open-ended. There's no emergency anymore. We can wait a year, 2 years. It's not imminent anymore. So now, when Hashem is going to send Yonah, it's going to be much, much slower, much more delicate, because it's not imminent. Originally, it was a haswatim. Okay, the alarm goes off. Okay, get into your truck, turn on the sirens, emergency, 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 go to Nineveh, because Nineveh is imminently about to be destroyed. Hashem has his finger on the trigger, right on the trigger. He's ready to push the button. But before you push the button, the rules are, you got to go and send a Navi to give them one last chance. The Navi doesn't want to go. So Hashem, okay, you know what? Let's put away the switch. Put away the switch for now. There's a delay, it's postponed. Once there's a delay, now everything has changed. The whole rules are going to be changed. That's what he writes over here. So Yonah, to a degree, was successful. By not listening to Hashem, he outsmarted Hashem. He changed the plans, so to speak. What? It doesn't say, he doesn't say explicitly what caused the delay, but that's what he writes. Maybe it's because since there's a rule that you cannot go destroy Yonah, a city, until you give them one last chance for the Navi, and the Navi doesn't want to go, we have no choice but to postpone the punishment. Let's read the words inside one more time. Hiski Yashenis Lamech, Yashenis Ben Yonah, She'ein Adoyme Linavu Rishonah, Kibur Rishonah, Yu Ruim Le'onish Miyot. Originally, the plan was to destroy Nineveh immediately. Shenis Acher Hadover, Alanavu, Arhanavu Ashenis, Niftechu lohem sha'arei teshuva. There was a delay. V'nis'achara ha'gezera. Why was there a change? It's not clear, but there was a change. The alkinam rishayna. That's why there's a difference in expression. In pasuk bay, in pasuk perik aleph, all the way back in the beginning of the sefer, it says zukra aleha. It says, like we discussed that at length. Ayin aleha with an ayin. Aleha means regarding her. Don't look her in the eye and speak to her. Talk in generality and abstractions. Talk regarding the city of Nineveh. Go to Nineveh and write an editorial in the new in Nineveh Times. write an editorial. Talk about Nineveh in abstract terms. Don't speak directly to the officials. Ki kriya be'al hi lipuronis. And write to the word a kriya with an ayin, al, in addition to the word that alecha is more general, is lipuronis means punishment. You find the same expression when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Kiro olai, Hashem declared upon me a set time to destroy Yerushalayim. Here the word is with an ayin, olai. V'zeh sh'amar ki olso ro'osam lefonai. And that's why back in Perek Aleph it says that evil has come before me. Kiloimar nigzro aleihem gezer misha olso ro'osam lefonai Hashem yisbarach v'nidoi neli shachis min ha'ilam. Their evil has come before me and it's imminent. Kimoisho nemar bestoim ki golot sa'akosam espnei Hashem. Avol bikan omar kro eileho with an aleph, which simply means look at her in the eye. Speak directly to her, to it, to them. But here he's telling us a drush. When it's an aleph, it does not mean evil. It means ki kol kriya the aleph lamid he litoiva. Beautiful insight. When it's an ayin, then it's lira'ah. An aleph is litoiva. Kmo vikorosi el Hadagon v'hirbeisiyosai. When Hashem wants to give us bracha, Hashem says, I will speak to the dagon el with an aleph lamed. V'alkein amar sheinis lefi shehi sheinis be'inyanah. That is why the word sheinis here is appropriate. When Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu about Paro, it doesn't count the times. Hashem spoke to Moshe the first time, the second, the third. You go count the psukim, it must be 50 times at least that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu to go give over a message to Paro. Doesn't count every single time Hashem spoke to Moshe to give over a message. So why then when it comes to Nineveh, does Hashem count the times he speaks to Yonah? The answer is, it's qualitatively different. The message, the technique, the approach is different. The first time it's speak with an ayin, oleha, with an ayin, tell them, Hashem has his finger on the button. You're ready to be destroyed.
It sounds true. I'm running through psukim, but I can think of two things right away: that olai, meso olai, rochel madera,
meso olai,
by Esa ben Yaakov. Psukim in my head that says olai.
It's consistent.
And so on and so forth. It uses the word olai as opposed to el.
Ayin lamid is pronos. Alif lamid is letoiv. Here there was a delay for whatever reason. Hashem decided we're going to postpone the punishment. It's not imminent. So now let's work with them. Let's try for them to do teshuva in a different way where it will be good. And now that's what we have with Sheinis. It's a qualitatively different type of prophecy that Yoni is delivering. Okay, that concludes Aleph and Beis. And Yirtz Hashem after Yom Tov will pick up a Pasuk Gimel. Yeah, it is. It is. Maybe that was all part of Hashem's plan.
Just running through my head, running through psukim, thinking that it works out. I just, in my head, it does. I think maybe that's why Moshe wasn't afraid. I wanted to say, which was a very good shot. Why Moshe, when he says, "Me'oz Moshe la parola da bevishmecha," you don't afraid. I didn't want to be the shliach. You want me? I could say what I want. What are you going to do? You wanted me. I want to go. So he had the temerity to say what he felt.